I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey hustlers, we know that this 2024, the entrepreneurial journey is filled with challenges. An often overlooked aspect is the time-consuming task of processing payroll and managing government requirements. And did you know that the average admin spends a whopping 50 hours per month dealing with just government compliance? That's time you could be spending on growing your business, or let's be honest, taking a well-deserved break. But fear not, we got a game changer for you. Introducing Sprout Solutions and their tailored solutions for MSMEs called the Payroll Starter. With Sprout Solutions Payroll Starter, you can finally reclaim your time and get your life back on track. Say goodbye to the stress of remembering tax dates or worrying about missed payroll runs. This bundle is designed to make your life easier and your business more efficient. And here's the best part. The cost starts just at 5,000 pesos per month for businesses with up to 10 employees. Yep, you heard that right. That's just 5,000 pesos per month. So why spend another minute drowning in payroll paperwork when Sprout can revolutionize the way you manage your payroll and government requirements? Take the first step towards a more efficient business today. Visit sprout.ph/payrollstartermonthly5k. If you missed that, don't worry. We have it in the description box of this episode. So click that too. And again, big shout out to Sprout Solutions because your time is too valuable to be spent on paperwork. Reclaim it with their Payroll Starter. Now let's begin this episode.
The Hustle Share podcast is brought to you by Uno Digital Bank, a full-spectrum digital bank licensed and regulated by the Banco Central ng Pilipinas, or BSP. Manage your money and maximize its potential growth with a secure and trusted bank that fits right in your pocket. Open a savings or time deposit account. Pay bills. Shop with the Uno Virtual Debit MasterCard or apply for a loan in the Uno mobile app today. And brought to you by DragonPay. DragonPay is the pioneer in alternative payments in the Philippines. DragonPay is the reigning fintech of the year in last year's Philippine Fintech Festival. Sign up now at www.dragonpay.ph.
Well, I guess I have to especially thank my dad for the work ethic. He was a workaholic. So number two is I offer everything to God. So all my hard work, it's for His great joy. I have crucifix in front of me. So if I feel tired, I just look at the crucifix and try to remember how much Jesus sacrificed for us.
Welcome to Hustle Share, the podcast that features the daily grinds of unique hustlers around the world to show not our differences, but that our hustles are very much alike. Now here is your host, Ronster Baitiong.
Welcome to the latest episode of the Share Podcast. We finally got this guy. I've been trying to get him on the show. I've been seeing a lot of posts about him through my man, Jason De La Rosa. Shout out to the Bounce Back community, which I've had here, 2020? But I've known the man since pre-pandemic through my mentor, Joji Azarin. So shout out to him. And I've been seeing a lot of the stuff that you guys have been doing, right? From Riselli all the way now to Kita and all that. And I've been super curious about what you guys are doing. And then recently, last year, towards the end of the year, I think it was Ignite Conference. I finally bumped into you in person, got to introduce myself. I'm like, yo, bro, I'd love to have you on the show. And he said, yes. Finally, you were able to find the time to get you on. But without further ado, let's welcome to the show the founder and CEO of Kita, Mr. Mark Concho. Welcome to the show, Mark.
Hey, thanks, Ron. Thanks for inviting me.
Very, very happy you finally got this to do. We both got super busy towards the Burr months. And again, congratulations. I've been wanting to congratulate you for the longest time. Towards the last part of the year, I remember talking about your raise. You raised $3 million in your seed round in our other podcast, the daily podcast that we have called The Daily Scrum. It's like, wow, they raised $3 million. there's not a lot of people that were able to raise last year. Till this year, I think. And for you guys to be able to do that on a seed, that's amazing. But before I get carried away, Mark, I need to ask you the million-dollar question. Mark, what's your hustle?
Well, it's a good term, a hustle. Well, for me, I'm turning 50 this year. So, and inspired by my dad who passed away a few years ago.
Oh, no.
I told myself, if I'm going to set up a business, because I've been in the corporate world for 20 years, I want a business that can truly help poor people or create an impact or the underprivileged, help the underprivileged. And in this case, as you guys will find out later on, it's the farmers or agricultural sector that we want to help.
I love it.
That's why we set Kita.
There you go. And again, I've been stuck in EDSA over the Christmas break, toward the Christmas rush. And I think even just last week, I was driving near Makati and there are several trucks of yours that I saw, like, oh, I know that logo, Kita. And that's amazing. So if that's the goal and that's the hustle right now, I need you to buckle up real quick. Because before we talk about your hustle and why this is so personal to you after working for corporate, we need to dissect your corporate hustle. Because we're going to have to ride the Hustle Share time machine all the way back, losing your track. All right. And we're going to go all the way back. I want to understand the origin story of a Mark Poncho. So you mentioned, obviously your dad is a very influential figure in your life, but walk me through Mark as a child, right? Was your dad a businessman? Can you share about the influences about hustling that you got early on in your life? And how did that leave an indelible mark to you?
No, it's a long story, but okay. Start with my dad.
We're here to talk about this. So it's all good. All right.
Okay. So my dad was fortunate to be able to study architecture in Harvard and then Berkeley.
What?
And then he came up to the Philippines and he decided to give back by becoming a teacher in UST, teaching architecture.
Yeah, I'm a Tamasha. There you go. So.
Okay, great. So obviously we were lower middle class because teachers are not paid that much, at least during that time. Yeah, so his goal really, he wanted to be a priest until he met my mom. So
that's the biggest budol.
Yeah, during those days were different. Like my mom was actually a student in UST and he was a dean. So she didn't attend her physical education classes because she, for whatever reason, she was the basketball muse. So she thought she was exempted. She had to ask for special permission from the dean to enroll. And that's how she met my dad.
Wow.
Yeah, but I think if that happened today, it's...
No, it's weird. I've heard several versions of this and that was okay from before. Okay, so... He was an educator, as a dean. So obviously, he's not just a random educator. He led people, right? Oh, so what was that like?
Well, he's very strict. He always emphasized no corruption. So later on, to support his family, to support us, he practiced architecture also. He got government projects. So he became the architect and project manager for some big government hospitals like National Kidney Institute, San Lazaro Hospital, Quirino Memorial. And when you talk about government projects, there's always the
red
avenue for possible corruption, right?
For the boys. There you go.
So yeah, there, because he told me that's people's money and you need to glorify God. The way to glorify God is not to do those kinds of things. So we try to, and I personally, I try to apply it in my life. I'm still struggling. Mm-hmm. And that's a story of reselling Kita also. You see, God moves in his own way, in his perfect time. Mm-hmm. If you believe in him and you believe in prayers, that he answers prayers.
That's amazing. All right. I like how you're starting this out, being God-centric. But I want to understand now. So, okay, he's an influential figure. Being great at what you do it's not a one-time thing only. It's a daily thing that you commit to. And if you live with this man for a long period of time, what were those habits that you saw him do that were instilled to you? And what were these things that he taught you to do that, again, you carry with you doing your hustle now?
Yeah, of course. As mentioned earlier, number one is do everything for God's greater glory.
Okay.
So, I mean, life versus
AMDG. Temporary. There you go.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, you're in the garden for the greater glory of God. Number two is live simply, save. It's not about the money. It's about the life after your life here.
Wow.
Number three, try to help the less fortunate. Yeah, so give your life purpose and meaning. So, and he was a workaholic, super workaholic. So, trying to be him, like him also.
Nice, amazing. So now in your early hustle, so what was it like growing up now? Like, you know, what did you start doing early? Were you in sports? Were you doing other extracurricular stuff? Well, and what did you start liking in hustling for? Did you do side hustles while you were in a student?
Well, I actually was a nerd and I didn't go to any parties or anything because I wanted to be a priest because I was inspired by my parents. I really wanted to be a priest.
Okay.
So I said, if I want to be a priest, then yeah.
No parties.
So everything was done that. Mm-hmm. So unfortunately, I entered the seminary and
What? Okay.
Yeah, the director there, and he asked me, Mark, have you ever had a girlfriend? I said, no, father, because it's hard to be a priest. So
no, father, yeah. It's Coach Saber. There you go. I'm sorry. Just kidding. Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
Well, he said, okay, Mark, I'll do you a favor. You go out first in the world, you get yourself a girlfriend, and if you still feel that you being a priest is your calling, then you're welcome to come back anytime.
Wow. So, is that a test? Do they do that for everyone all the time?
I don't know, but he must have seen that. Well, I don't know if it's a blessing in disguise, but God works in mysterious ways. So I had to go to the seminary. Then it took me some time to get a girlfriend, 4 years to get my first girlfriend.
Mm-hmm.
So after 4 years, I never went back to the seminary.
Father, thank you. There you go. So he was able to find a girlfriend. So what did you take up in college, and how did that lead you into your first hustles after school?
So I took up economics and development studies in Ateneo.
Mm-hmm.
And after school, so my best friend, Victor, used to work for Globe, had a job interview with PLDT.
Mm-hmm.
So he invited me to join him in the job interview.
Right.
So I said, okay. So in the job interview, so we were there. And then after his job interview, he goes out and whispers in my ear, Mark, whatever you do, you be humble and you quote from the Bible. So I said, why? What? And then I was called in. So I never got to understand why.
Okay.
Then so I was interviewed and et cetera, et cetera. So I made sure to quote from the Bible, then remain humble. I said, the position was for marketing specialist. Said, okay. I have no experience. I think I graduated from economics, development studies, but if you give me a chance, I'll do my best.
Okay.
Yeah. Then I went out. I said, oh, Vic, what happened? Why? Apparently, and Vic's my best friend. So
yeah.
What doing this? Well, kasi the interviewer asked me, why should we hire you? And then he answered, why shouldn't you hire me? I was the number one salesperson in Globe. I was awarded blah, blah, blah many times.
Okay.
Yeah. And then the interviewer told him, quoted from the Bible, and said that whoever exalts himself, shut up. So, okay. So long story short, I got hired. Not
okay.
I started off at the rank and file, marketing assistant, marketing specialist.
And this is in PLDT?
PLDT in 1999.
Okay.
And then working there, after 1 year, PLDT set up a new division called Internet and Future Services Division.
Wow.
This was 2002. And it was to launch broadband.
So this is right after dial-up, whatever those ISP bonanza guys were doing before. So thank you for that. Now this is broadband. So whenever somebody calls, no, your line won't get cut anymore and whatnot. So what were you doing there? And when you got there, what was the role?
Yeah, interesting story also. So Internet Fusion Services for Broadband. So they tried to hire, PLD tried to hire from within and even outside. They interviewed a lot of candidates within PLDT managers and up. And nobody wanted to take on that role because broadband, I mean, what's the broadband? Hell is that? Nobody. Right. Broadband. Everybody uses dial-up internet. You know? So that's such a small role.
Right.
But firstly, I saw the opportunity. I saw that it would be the future.
Yep.
So I took the courage and went up to the vice president, head of marketing. It was many layers. And I, and his name's John. He's also my mentor. And I asked, Sir John, I heard that there's a position open for Internet Future Services for broadband. And I know that you've interviewed a lot of candidates. I heard I'd like to, see if you could give me a chance. Mm-hmm. And I promised him I won't let him down. So he must have seen something in me. I don't know what it was. And then he hired me. So I took on the role. It's a one-man team.
What?
And we launched ESL.
One-man team?
Yeah, for at least 8 months. And then until I hired another person to help.
That's startup-esque. Creating a company within a company. What were the day-to-day like and how were... What were the KPIs you were trying to hit?
Well, KPIs. Broadband, the reality at that time, and it's sometimes hard to believe now, was that nobody knew broadband. It was very expensive. It was like 5,000 pesos a month, 10,000 pesos a month.
So only the villages around Makati and Valleverde and White Plains can afford that. Right. Okay.
And not only that, but there's so many problems. Like it would fail every hour, and then sometimes lower than dial-up internet because it was a new technology at the time. You know, this was more than 20 years ago. So you had so many complaints. And, since our clients were ultra rich,
they're going to be angry as irate. Right.
So that was the first 2 years of broadband to re-stabilize the technology and rolled out in wider areas. But then, we were fortunate that we grew our team. And then after a few years, I was given the opportunity to handle also SME, Small Medium Business Division, a new division for PLD, which was SME. And then it was rebranded to SME Nation later on. And then I also concurrently handled, after 1 year, content and value-added services. So by the time I left PLD, I was handling three divisions, broadband, SME, and content and VAS. So
that
no choice.
That is amazing.
Yeah, and we hit our targets year on year for 7 years consistently. So in terms of corporate, my boss, John told me, Mark, you've set a record in terms of promotions. Nobody's ever been promoted faster than you.
Wow.
And that was first, I have a good team in place. So I think that's first learning. If you want to be successful, you need to have a good team. You need to choose the right people. And when HR asked me whom I wanted to hire as the product managers, I said, "Want minimum magna cum laude."
Minimum. They took me seriously. There's not a lot of them out there.
Yeah, at least if you get magna cum laude, that they have a work ethic. They're smart, number one.
Yep.
And they have good work ethic, and it's just a matter of molding their, molding and inspiring them.
That's
so
amazing.
Fortunate, all my direct reports were actually summa cum laude. They said summa cum laude reporting to me. And they actually had very good offers, job offers from top FMCGs, Unilever, Procter & Gamble, Nestle, etc. And I convinced them to join PLDT. So I think as a startup, one of the lessons there is you don't have as much money as other big tech companies.
Yep.
You don't have. Yeah, you're risky. They see as risky because it's new. You need to be able to hire very good talent. You need to be able to share with them your vision and cause and get them to believe in it.
Yeah.
So in this, what I told them was, they want to sell, they want to market and sell deodorants, shampoos, soaps, or do you want to join me here in PLDT and help, promote broadband internet to equalize, to help especially students, helps the studies, help the economy, help the Filipino people.
That's amazing.
Yeah. And then, they came up there. They decided to join. That's, so I got a good team in place.
And that's a key skill. You know, at the end of the day, you're right. A lot of startup founders will have to, again, when people graduate or whoever's a free agent out there, you're not the only company in town. So you're going to have to really, what people don't understand when you're building a team at the start, it's not like, oh, I'm going to post a job post on LinkedIn, on Caliber, or on JobStreet and say, okay, people will flock to you and the best of the best will join me. It's the other way around. You should be the one hunting these guys to join you because you're only as good as the people that's going to join you as well. But you mentioned also skills, Mark. You won't get promoted that fast if you didn't add up real soft skills and hard skills on that path before you jump to digital eventually. What were the foundational skills you built here during the stint that allowed you to really move up that fast?
Well, since my background was economics, I had to learn marketing very quickly. And since we were moving into, I headed content and value-added services later on. So digital marketing, which is fairly new at that time, since I became head of content and VAS in 2005. So Facebook wasn't even
what
born.
Was digital marketing back then? Banner ads?
Yeah, so it was
SEO?
Pretty cutting edge. We played with a lot of new technologies. We launched like PLDT Play Gaming in 2004, before gaming, online gaming became huge. So I think we launched one of the first online gaming servers in Asia.
Wow.
In 2004, which is PLDT Play. And then we also launched PLDT, prior version of Watchpad. So it's an online streaming service. And this before Netflix became popular, years before Netflix became popular. But then timing is PLD Play was successful because it was one of the first. But then Watchpad was not as successful for streaming version, online streaming, because technology wasn't mature yet. So timing issues. So learning also for a startup.
And mobile wasn't big yet.
That's true. So in terms of learnings, I had to do a lot of research. It's good that I like reading.
Nice.
That's one. My hobbies. So I had to read a lot and I had to work even harder. So I'd be in the office at 5 a.m.
Because
I know all the guards, I'd open up the lights in the office. I'd be the first on the floor. So when I go to my office in the sixth floor of PLDT Ramon Cuanco building, I'd be the one to open the lights. The janitors normally arrive at 6:30.
Oh my God.
And then I'd be in the office up to around 10 p.m. I'd be for home 10 p.m.
That's crazy.
Because I lived in Fairview, Kansas City, which is 2 hours away from Makati because of the traffic. So oil traffic.
4 hours with traffic. Okay.
Yeah, 3-4 hours in traffic.
Oh my God.
Inside, just stay in the office up to 10, work a little bit more, and then leave at 10. So I'd be in the office from 5 to 10 every day. Sometimes Saturdays and Sundays, I'd be in the office too. So work hard. If you work hard, you're able to make up a lot of your deficiencies, personal deficiencies, since you're able to have more time to research, learn more, read more, and learn skills that you need to get the job done.
All right. Last question before we take our first break. That is an intense hustle. And that's very startup-esque. Founders typically I see a lot of founders go through that right now, but it's because the carrot is they're working on their own thing. But for you, working in corporate with that tenacity consistently for years, I want to understand a couple of things. How did you develop that? Because this is where a lot of young people struggle. You know, they always want to be perfect and they want instant gratification nowadays. They don't want to put in the work through a prolonged period of time. And while you're developing this habit, what was the mindset you're putting yourself through to keep going? Because at the end of the day, it's human nature. We're going to get tired. You're going to get burnt out. You're gonna start hating things that you're doing, right? Especially if you happen to be put in a division, say in corporate, that you don't really like. How did you develop those two things?
Well, I guess I have to especially thank my dad for the work ethic. He was a workaholic.
Amazing.
So I think that helped a bit on me. Number two is I offer everything to God. So all my hard work, it's for His greater glory. So I'd have a crucifix in front of me. So if I feel tired, I just look at the crucifix and I try to remember how much Jesus sacrificed for us.
Oh my God.
And Yes, of course, there's also personal ambition. Well, I had a very good mentor, John Jones. I was inspired by him. And I wanted to prove, I made a commitment to him, not to let him down. And I wanted to hit the targets together with my team. And to hit the targets, you just have to work extra hard. So do whatever it takes, no excuses. And last but not least, yeah, personal ambition. I wanted to get promoted quickly also.
That's amazing.
Because a lot of people said, you don't have marketing background. How can you succeed? You know. So I wanted to prove that.
Wow. But okay, last night, I'm going to ask one. On those days, that was really dark. Aside from looking at the crucifix, because you sacrifice a lot of your social life. Sometimes that's what we get our extra push, right? You know, that bit of a balance to push. How did you keep going? Because this is common for startup founders, where everything is dark, everything is not going right and whatnot. You're going to have to really dig in deep to plow through. But if you've been doing this for years, man, I'm already a big fan. But how were you riling yourself up during the very, very dark days?
Well, I wouldn't say it's dark days. My darkest days were in reselling because it's just hard work. If I don't, I have food to eat. I have a bed to sleep in. So it's not exactly dark, but I get what you're trying to say. There's some days when I'd fall asleep in my desk. He's so tired. I don't know. I just habits. Number one is habits, since it was a habit for me. So it didn't seem too hard.
Yeah.
And number two is I was driven by a higher purpose, which is to glorify God, since our lives here are very temporary. And number three, I just want to rest until the job gets done.
That is amazing. And if you are not a fan yet until this point with Mark, I'm just blown away of this amazing hustle. And again, this is just the start of his career. Let's see how intense it gets after this. But let's talk about that more after the break.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
Hey guys, I have a very, very exciting opportunity I want to share with you guys. If you're a B2B startup founder, listen up. Your ticket to growth is here. Introducing Impact 24, the Philippines' largest B2B SaaS challenge. Calling all startups in their pre-launch, pre-seed, or seed stages, this is your chance to accelerate your growth. Submit your pitch to Impact 24 and get ready for a 10-week intensive program to elevate your solution. What's in it for you? How about up to 500,000 pesos in MVP project support, exclusive credits from industry partners, personalized mentoring, and a shot to pitch at SaaSCon PH, the country's biggest SaaS conference this April. But yo, you gotta hurry up because submissions close on January 26, 2024 already. Don't miss out on this opportunity to take your startup to new heights. Apply now at saaschallenge.ph. That's saaschallenge.ph. And good luck, and I'll see you guys in Impact 24. And we're back in the break. We are still with Mark Concho, then told us his intense work ethic. I mean, I've seen a lot of hustlers, but this is intense. Oh my God. And what I love about it is because you're right. Hustling is a muscle. And if you don't develop discipline and good habits to exercise that muscle, even if you try, you won't be able to do it because, you know, it's muscle memory. If your body and your system is not used to that grind, you know, even if you had motivation, if you don't develop those good habits, you're probably gonna struggle hustling that hard. And that's what you've done. So PLDT, you've been doing well, you've been promoted so many times. What led you to jump ship to the they weren't acquired yet. Digital wasn't PLDT yet, but eventually it will come full circle when they acquire Sun Cellular, technically. But what made you to do the jump in digital?
Well, my mentor and my first boss in PLDT, John, moved to digital and he gave a job offer to join him in digital. Apparently, later I found out he was, after a few months, he moved to ABS-CBN. So I took off. I got the opportunity to take over some of his roles in digital.
Okay. So what was that hustle like, especially now? Digital, this is the era where, again, they get credit for doing a lot of Unli, where Unli wasn't even part of that, right? This is under the Gokongwei group back then, prior to. How is that different than the hustle in PLDT and what were you able to develop during this time?
Well, digital, there are two separate companies, Digital and Sun Cellular. So it's more on the fixed line side, digital.
Got it.
The biggest challenge, of course, of digital was you're competing against a giant such as PLDT that dominated.
You're competing about what you built before.
And of course, in terms of resources, a lot of resources are going to the mobile side. Understandably so, because mobile was the future.
Yeah.
So the fixed line was just, it's good to grow the fixed line, but priority was mobile, which is a correct strategy. So we didn't have as much resources as PLDT, and then we had to grow the business. So of course, in terms of branding, perception, even quality, PLDT was superior. So that was a bigger challenge for me and my team in digital. In terms of motivation, and I think I burned out a bit in digital after PLDT. I was working nonstop in PLDT for seven years. So the effects of burned out hit me hard in digital. Mm-hmm. And plus the fact that, I didn't have that much resources. One chance was I didn't get to really build my team. When I joined digital, there was a team already in place. So you had to coach them, mentor them. And it's different from handpicking, the team that you want. So before I had summa cum laude supporting me, here I had veterans, telco veterans. And I was a young guy because I was only 31 years old, at the vice president 31. So of course, there's also the perception, who's this guy? He's only 30 years old and we're already like 50 and he's already a vice president. So.
Right.
So it was a totally different culture, PLDT and digital, but we managed to grow the fixed line business of digital. Mm-hmm. It's a bigger challenge, bigger struggle. There are two components to it. The people challenge. You have to prove yourself to your team, to the people around you, because I was fairly young for that role. And number two, the resource constraints as well. The mindset of the Gokongwei group is different from the First Pacific group.
Yep.
It's good. That's why they're very successful also in their own way. They're very thrifty. Cost savings. I always emphasize savings. So one story, if I may share, is related to me by one of the members of the family, Gokongwei family. It's one time during the leadership meeting that Mr. John Gokongwei called our CFO to come to him.
Big John. And this is the Big John.
It's Mr. John. And he was saying, angry or irritated. Mm-hmm. And he said to our CFO, why are you using, he was waving the paper that our CFO gave him, sheaf of papers. He said, why are you using brand new paper and why so thick? Next time, okay, you use thinner paper and scratch paper.
Wow.
And Mr. John was at that time was one of the richest, top five richest guys in the Philippines. So what kind of ethic, even paper, on paper. So that's what, if there's anything, any takeaway, it taught me to be cost conscious. When we have meetings in digital, they don't serve food. They don't serve, you'll be lucky to get mineral water, you'll be lucky to get to be served food, and it's cheapy.
So they're sticking within their own in Jack and Jill and URC.
Oh, yeah, very cost conscious. So that's a takeaway. And I think for startup founders, since you're very limited, especially now in this environment, you're difficult to raise.
Yep.
You have to be focused on profitability and cost conscious, be very cost conscious. Every best counts.
I love it. Now, though, that's an amazing, virtue that you need to have, because it's especially as young startup founders, especially first timers, we get them that money. They sometimes mistake that. Oh shoot, I am a millionaire. I can make it rain. A lot of people make this mistake, and in reality, it's not yours. You're using it as runway for your business, and it doesn't matter how rich you are. But if you develop that frugality within your system, right? That's a great virtue to have. And even in those little details, I didn't even know that was that intense, right? And you see it with this offspring. I get a chance to work with Miss Liza as an investor in Podcast Network Asia, right? And man, she and just seeing how she also runs Summit Media, it's probably something that was also taught to her because of Sir John Gokongwei. But okay, so after Digital, you now went to 88DB, right? Your country manager and managing director. What was that hustle like? And at this point, you come from VP and you're still probably very, very young at this point, 30 plus, whatever, right? What was that leadership style already now that you're the top dog, country manager, managing director? And how did you then pick up all these things that you've learned in PLDT and Digital to lead the pack in 88DB?
Well, that's where I met Jason De La Rosa, my co-founder.
There you go. Okay.
88DB was a CEO. And with 88DB, it gives you a global perspective because 88DB is a global company.
Correct.
Lots of companies in US, India, all over Southeast Asia. And I was fortunate I got to handpick my team in 88DB.
There you go. Summa cum laude again? That's expensive.
I had one cum laude reporting to me.
Okay.
And then, we set a number of firsts. So we were actually, the challenge with 88DB was, it was for the Philippine business at least, for the past 3 years, it was declining. Revenues were declining. So it was a turnaround story. I had to do a turnaround. They hired me to turn it around.
Okay.
And in 1 year, we turned it around and we became the fastest growing country among all 88DB's business units versus India, US, and other Southeast Asian countries.
How are you able to do that?
Best practices. So our business model, 88DB's business model, is to create websites for SMEs, for companies. So the way we did it for 88DB, not just in Philippines, across the world, was we have account executives or salespeople going around talking to SMEs and trying to close the deal, set up a website for 10 to 25,000 pesos. So for me, we said, and I guess the learning here, even for startup founders, is that's difficult to scale because you need to hire a lot of salespeople.
Yep.
And hiring salespeople affects your overhead, your operating expenses. In fact, the biggest OPEX for most startups is manpower. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So this would be a better way. So what we did was we created an elite team called the institutional team. So they focus on big accounts. So those big accounts are like, one for accounts that we closed was Department of Education.
Wow.
So we just closed DepEd and we got to provide websites to 5,000 DepEd units, public schools.
That's amazing.
And less than 1 year. And to imagine, the previous years, our target was just 2,000, 3,000 websites. So with just this one account, we have 5,000. For almost the same effort, the effort it took to close DepEd is almost the same effort it takes to close one small SME.
Correct.
Orders one.
So but we did chose whales instead of going for smaller fish.
Yeah. So our learning there was to look at solutions that can scale, that are more cost effective. And in this case was to focus on institutions and large accounts for the same effort.
That's amazing. All right. Now, if I'm just going to reference your LinkedIn, the next stint you did was One Network E-commerce. Was this your first startup?
Yes, first startup.
Okay, and this is 2015, 2017. This is with Jason De La Rosa already. Obviously, he's you guys are partners in crime all the time, right? But 2015, 2017, yes, e-commerce is already existing at that point, but it's not the e-commerce that we know of now, where it's such so ingrained to who we are as well. This is still very early foundational days of e-commerce. What did you try to build? And coming from the safety net of corporate where you don't have to worry about your salary and you're going to be okay to jump in to create your own startup. What was that? What, first of all, two things. What was what led you to, you know, take the leap of entrepreneurship? And what was that very first experience like being your own boss?
Okay, well, a bit of a backstory. So 88DB is acquired by Seek.com. Australian. Their sister company, 88DB, is JobsDB. So they acquired JobsDB. And together
they also
with
acquired JobStreet. Seek also owns them. I think.
Also, yes. So we were out of a job. So we had my options were to go back to the corporate world.
Okay.
Or, as I was in talks with Chase, I was talking with Chase, or to try the startup, you know, Seam. Okay. So I decided, did a bit of research. And so while waiting for a new job, I said, okay, let's give it a shot. Let's try putting up a startup. So this was in 2015. What was popular at the time was multi-level marketing and social e-commerce was starting to boom a bit. Nice. So I said, there might be an opportunity here to combine multi-level marketing and e-commerce. And that's why it's called One E-commerce. Then we told ourselves, how do we scale this? It's, you know, networking. You need to get influencers. So we said, let's go for the big ones, the celebrities. So we were able to sign up a lot of big celebrities. Derek Ramsey, Piotr Pasquale.
What?
It helps. My aunt was Charo Santos, co-owner of ABS-CBN. But
right.
Yeah. We got to meet up with Ann Curtis. We had a number of celebrities, you know, in our, signed up with us, you know, One Network. So it should have been easy, right? We have all these celebrities with millions of influence followers, et cetera, et cetera. But our biggest failure or constraint to launch so was the dev side, the tech side. We were overly ambitious when it came to our tech platform since we wanted to combine social e-commerce, influencer marketing, and networking all at once. And the tech platform never got done. And after 2 years, there were still so many bugs. So we wasted the initial momentum we had with our celebrities, especially with our celebrities.
Right.
That's a dream come true for many startups.
Absolutely.
celebrities signed up.
Exactly.
Yeah. So learning for us to apply now is MVP. You do small scale, don't be ambitious with your tech. You prioritize your tech. Get the important things as far as tech is done, and then you build an app. But you have to get it done and launch it as soon as possible first.
Absolutely.
But we were always waiting for the perfect tech platform before launching it because we didn't want to disappoint our celebrities.
Exactly.
So that was a big failure and big learning for us as well.
And then that's absolutely true because a lot of people, again, for me, I'm not a dev guy, right? I've had a chance to surround myself with great devs before. Had my own dev shop, got acquired in ChatbotPH. But again, one thing, this is the hard part about building a tech startup by default, right? Because at the end of the day, your core is going to be tech. What you don't want to do is have either the tech go too fast and your BD or your customer acquisition or customer development is not in parallel. Because what you're going to end up doing is you're going to over-engineer a product that nobody wants to do. Or you do the other flip side of that is you do too much BD and your product is still in MVP mode with a lot of bugs. What you're going to end up is you're going to have a lot of tech debt. And by the time your customers or your users, how many they are, will come to the platform and be like, what the hell is this? They'll churn and it's going to be hard to get them back. The balancing act is always going to be do it in parallel as much as possible. So that's why if you're really going to do tech, you want to have enough resources by raising or whatever that is to fund your best tech team. Because it's the most expensive thing on your payroll also. If you want to build a great tech team, you have to be able to recruit the best engineers that can build the best product for you, right? Because if you're able to, again, have access to a Papa P or a Derek Ramsey, and then the product that they're endorsing is shit, oh my God, it's not going to work, right? So that's amazing. And what's interesting here is that after this, you also went to one of the best in the business in building product in Voyager. But before that, sorry, you I think I cut you off. Do you wanted to add to that?
No, I agree with you 100%. And coming from mindset, I've been in corporate world before ATDB for like a number of years. You had more or less a lot of resources at your disposal. And like startup, very limited. So yes, that was also learning for me personally.
And you bootstrapped this, I assume, right? So it's hard to really scale that up if you don't really have a big war chest to go to war with.
But not that huge. Very
exactly.
Small, yeah.
Right. Okay. So now you went to the Doi Vea universe in Voyager, right? He is a legend. I've been trying to get him on the show. I'm turning 5 years. Sir Doi, if by any chance, love to have you on the show. Talk about it because he has a lot of alums that he's taught, he's mentored over the tech ecosystem that are doing well now. But what was it like being the managing director of e-commerce in Voyager and being the head of the business development in Voyager up until 2019?
Well, okay, so it was back. Voyager was owned by the PLD Group by Smart.
Yep.
So it's back to familiar territory for me. Mm-hmm. The challenge here was the priority for Voyager was Maya, rightly so, that e-wallet business. And then
was able to evolve. I still call it PayMaya. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I struggle Maya. Calling it Maya.
Because they're so much more than just payments. So
yeah, I know. But for me, I'm still stuck with the name. Like, PayMaya is what I call it. Yeah.
So there are four business units in Voyager. There was the e-wallet business, which is Maya.
Yep.
Then you have e-commerce, digital commerce business, which I headed. Then you had the fintech business unit and the marketing tech or martech business units.
Yep.
So the strategy of Voyager at that point was for those business units to support each other, to create an ecosystem. Mm. But it's easier said than done.
Of course.
So when Tencent KKR came in and invested into Maya, they decided to focus on profitability and scalability. And so by focusing everything on Maya, so they killed the other business units, digital commerce, fintech.
Wow,
and
all in,
yeah. So yeah, to focus. And I think that was the correct strategy because to succeed, Maya still considered a startup, but at that time,
correct.
You have to focus on your core strengths. So well, that's what they did. For digital commerce, we launched, it was the first version, similar to reselling. Social e-commerce has started to become very popular. Mm-hmm. This was 2017, 2018. So we want to be the first in South Asia to launch a social e-commerce platform. So we managed to launch it. It was called Digisoria.
Digisoria, I love it.
In early 2019, I think we were the first, one of the first in the Philippines to do so. Mm-hmm. But then Tencent PR killed the business unit, so we didn't have time to fully launch it, okay. And gain traction.
Got it. Now, again, after this, before we take our last break, this is where I started hearing about you again. Your man, Jason De La Rosa. I remember now how I got to see him. So around 2018, 2019, right after I sold Chatbot PH, I came into this organization through, again, my mentor, Joji Azurin, who is also very close with Jason. I don't know, he splits times with you because they're also co-founders in several startups as well. Told me about BNI. I was like, what the hell is BNI? Right, so they asked me, like, join Jason. And, oh my God. Jason asked me, like, pull up to this hotel in QC near ABS at 6 a.m. or 7. It's like, what? 6 a.m. or 7? And I have to be dressed in full corporate. Like, huh? I don't dress in full corporate, but okay, I'm going to give it a try. Right? And BNI is this amazing institution
where you come up every week and you literally network for others and help each other out. That's how I really got into it. And then again, eventually, Jason was able to convince me to like join because they created a new chapter in Eastwood, right? Unfortunately for me, being the younger guy that really struggles to wake up very early. Now, I wake up at that time naturally. I don't need that. My body clock is full Tito mode now. Back then, I struggled to really maximize that opportunity at one point. But that's also how I saw him really talking about reselling, right? And he was talking to a lot of the P&I peeps, you know, getting it out there. Talk to me about what reselling was. Because he said earlier that this was the hardest part of your career at that point. What were you trying to build in reselling? And what were the challenges you had to overcome creating it?
Well, okay. So I personally thought that social e-commerce was a huge opportunity at that time in 2019.
Yeah.
And since they killed the business unit, so I was redundanted out of a job. So I asked permission from Sir Doy if I could continue social e-commerce outside. I said, yes, go ahead. And maybe don't plan on doing social e-commerce and you're focused on Maya e-wallet.
Yep.
So I talked to Jason and said, let's do it. And then let's do social e-commerce, but with livelihood, focusing on livelihood as component. And that's how reselling was born.
Mm-hmm.
So reselling, the business model is you can become a reseller. Zero puhunan, you don't need capital, zero puhunan. And you can resell thousands of products with no capital. Right. It's simply choosing what products you want to sell, resell, add it to your online store, and then share your online store to your friends and your social media network. So good concept, right? Sounds good on paper, but very challenging in terms of the business model itself and in terms of execution. Why? Well, number one, you have to allocate attractive margins for your resellers.
Correct.
For them to reach.
Because it's C2C.
Yes. And then when it comes to products, of course, what consumers want are grocery products, right? FMCG, commonly used products. You're competing now against Lazada, the giants, Lazada and Shopee.
Right.
You get it cheaper there. And then number three, you need a lot of cash. You need a lot of investment.
Yes.
To make it, you need to scale it. To be able to go to the manufacturers, the product owners, and negotiate good margins or discounts. And fourth is, since it's something new, you need a lot of investment also for the tech, to build a tech platform.
Yep.
So we did have a lot of big partnerships signed up with us, like DSWD from the government, celebrities again. But then, number one, tech. We didn't have enough investment to really fully build up our tech stack.
Correct.
And enough runway to scale it to become profitable.
Mm-hmm.
So by the end of December 2021, we were out of cash. We had to lay off almost everybody, our employees. Three employees left, including myself. I was deep in debt and I was praying. One of the hardest times in my life, I was praying because I had to support my kids.
Yeah,
my priority was my kids. Christmas time, and I don't even have money to give to my kids because I had to take care of my employees also. So I was praying to God, God, I have a job offer from for a regional position. It's a good paying job. Or should I continue being a startup founder? Let me know your decision. So I prayed and I asked, Lord, there's a deadline because of course I need to support my kids. So if it's okay with you, God, up to Friday, next week to get. If I get a 2 million peso investment, just 2 million pesos, that's a sign that I should continue as a startup founder. If I don't get 2 million pesos by Friday next week, then that's you telling me to accept the job offer because it was there.
Right.
And lo and behold, Friday comes.
Okay.
And I was pitching in one of the startup events. I was invited to pitch. So there's a pitch.
Okay.
And then after the pitch, after the event, somebody reached out to me, Adrian.
Adrian.
And said, Mark, I like the idea of reselling. Can my family invest in you if we're interested? So then I said, sure, how much are you looking at? 2 million. 2 minutes.
Oh my God, that is so amazing. Sakto.
I believe in the power of prayers, and it's happened so many times in my life. God always answers prayers perfectly in His perfect time. So, Friday, sakto, the right amount and the right time. So that was His message to me to continue being a startup founder. And that was one of the darkest days in my life, because LDT is nothing. Because if you have food, if you can provide for your family, everything's manageable. But I didn't even have enough money to support my family. So that was the darkest day.
Yeah, I can totally relate. That was last year for me, 2023. Triple whammy for me, bro. Our biggest client in Podcast Network Asia was Spotify. It churned. 70% of our monthly recurring revenue was gone overnight because they had a big, massive strategy change, because they were basically bankrolling podcasts around the world, signing Joe Rogan, all these things, all these other things. And they realized it's not working. And we were developing like what, 40, 50 podcasts for them. And overnight, it was canceled. So it felt like a rug pull, right? So 70%, I had to cut my team in half. And then I had to literally scramble for like that additional funding just to be able to bounce back. But me and my co-founder, my Jason De La Rosa, Joseph Acuna, said, all right, investors, give us a bit of money. And until we get cash flow positive, we won't take salary. So we're betting on ourselves hard. And good thing Joseph had a law firm to at least make some of the things to make ends meet. I had this podcast to keep the lights on. But every month, I had to figure out how I'm going to be able to pay my mortgage, how I'm going to be able to support my family and everything. I have I'm the breadwinner, right? And then around June last year, so we're in the thick of it, right? Going, hustling hard. My co-founder passes away. So all of a sudden, like, how the hell am I going to do this? Right? They're now at the crossroads. Like, am I going to quit or all this hustle just going to be put to waste? Because, I mean, we can always rebuild, but yeah, I give credit to my team, because in those very, very dark hours, very dark days, they really was my support system. And we just had to focus. And in November, we finally hit cash flow positive. You know, just little things like making 13th month pay, being able to have a stress-free Christmas was just a big blessing. And I'm super grateful. And now hopefully this year is less of that. Now I'll have sueldo, so I can smile better again. But again, double whammy, triple whammy. There's so much more drama that happened in between as well. Had to let go of people, had to let go of our studio. Stuff that I really loved and cared about was there. So I totally can relate. And we will continue on how you were able to bounce back after getting that 2 million peso investment after the break.
Hey Hustlers, it's time to talk business once again, and we're excited to share a bit more info about our sponsor, Sprout Solutions. And again, just like what I said at the start of the episode, you should check out Sprout's Payroll Starter as you grow your own startup. Because this bundle that they have is literally what you need to take your startup to the next level as you grow your employees. And this bundle is your key to freedom, including payroll outsourcing to experts, a subscription to timekeeping and attendance software, and government compliance services. Sprout's Payroll Starter has you covered for payroll, BIR, SSS, and taxes. All the stuff that no founder loves to do. So let Sprout handle the busy work and say goodbye to lines and tax payment stress. All this for as low as 5,000 pesos. Again, that's just 5,000 pesos all in for your payroll and HR needs. So visit sprout.eh, payroll-starter-monthly-5k, or again, just click the link in the description box of this episode to elevate your business management game. And again, big thank you to Sprout Solutions, liberating your time for what truly matters. Hey, hustlers, wish there was an easy way to open a bank account and grow your money without the hassle of lengthy application process and income documents? Well, I got good news, because today's sponsor, Uno Digital Bank, is here to help you achieve your financial goals. You can easily open an account with the Uno app in just 5 minutes and one valid ID. And as one of the 6 digital banks licensed by the Banco Central ng Pilipinas, the company is committed to providing customers with simpler, better, and more accessible banking. Last year, Uno Bank was recognized by the Asia Banking and Finance Awards and bagged the title Open Banking Initiative of the Year due to the success of its partnership with GCash, one of the Philippines' leading mobile wallet platforms. And with the Uno mobile app, you can access an hashtag Uno Ready Savings account and enjoy daily interest crediting. With their hashtag Uno Earn or hashtag Uno Boost Time Deposit accounts, you can enjoy a high interest rate of up to 6.5% per annum. Enjoy monthly payouts with hashtag Uno Earn and flexible tenors with hashtag Uno Boost. Other app features include pay bills, the Uno Virtual Debit MasterCard, life insurance, scan and pay with QRPH, and phones. And the one thing that I really love about Uno Digital Bank is they're open to collaborate with a lot of Filipino startups. I've had a chance to see the partnerships that they've had lined up with the startups that they have, and it's truly exciting to see how a digital bank like Uno can enable startups to unlock the power of fintech through digital banking. So if you're ready to elevate your banking experience, download the Uno mobile app today from the Google Play Store or App Store. Or if you want to collaborate with them, I'll be happy to give you an intro. Just shoot us an email at hello@huffleshare.com. Hey, hustlers, I hope you're having a great 2024 so far. As you know, a lot of startups had a very challenging 2023, and hopefully things are going to do better this year for a lot of us. Not just because it's the year of the dragon, but also because our sponsor, DragonPay, is here to help your startups process payments in the most efficient way. Established in 2010, DragonPay empowers businesses of all sizes to accept and disburse payments through secure and convenient channels, giving your customers the flexibility to choose the payment method that suits them best. With over 85 partner channels, 35,000 partner branches nationwide, including QRPH, e-wallets, crypto, buy now, pay later, and many more. They also process an astonishing 15 million transactions processed globally each month. DragonPay is your trusted choice for online payments. And here's something to show you how legit DragonPay is. DragonPay was named FinTech of the Year at last year's Philippine FinTech Festival in 2023. So let's make 2024 extra prosperous for you and your startup in this year of the dragon. For more details, head on over to dragonpay.ph. That's dragonpay.ph. Trust the pioneer. Trust DragonPay. And we're back in the break. We are still with Mark Concho. Then told us how he was able to get out of that very, very dark hour. And I've never seen, gave me goosebumps of how you're so malakas up top, huh? Very on the dot on what you what you needed answers with. Very specific. And that's amazing. Well, you mentioned Adrian. Sorry, for those who don't know who Adrian was, who's Adrian?
So Adrian is Silkyanko, was my co-founder in Kita.
Got it.
He was also the investment consultant for John Henry, helping John Henry with investments. Later on, John Henry to invest in us as one of our angel investors as well.
That's amazing. All right. So when this came, this investment came, $2 million, what was the pitch? Is it still to continue what you were doing, Reselli? Because one thing that we didn't get to discuss is you launched Reselli August 2019. And this is literally just a month before the pandemic hit. And the pandemic bamboozled everybody during that whole thing. Whatever the plan was, out the window. You had to figure it out on the fly. What was the pitch then when you had this $2 million investment?
Yeah, $2.5 million. So it was actually higher than that.
$2.5 million, okay.
So we had to, since we only had 3 employees left and we only had 2.5 billion pesos, most of which went out to paying debts, loans and debts, and back pay of employees. We did have a lot of cash left.
Yep.
So we had to focus on what was profitable, what we could scale and become profitable. So when you look at the data, the products with the highest profit margins for us was the fresh produce, fruits and vegetables. So we decided to go all in fresh produce and focus on that. So we started in a way, since we didn't have a lot of cash left, we had less than 100,000 pesos left after paying all the loans and back pays. We started off with I borrowed a dining room and I borrowed my mom's pickup truck.
Wow.
To save costs in February 2022. Yeah, February 2022. And the rest is history. So we grew from a dining room and my mom's 25-year-old pickup truck. A few months later, we moved to a 100 square meter warehouse. And then now we have three large warehouses, more than 20 brand new delivery vans. And we're probably the fastest growing agritech startup in the Philippines. Yeah.
Yeah, and right. Again, you are solidified with a $3 million seed investment round. But I want to understand a couple of things real quick. So with Kita, right, you saw that the data was really coming in from fresh produce. Where was this demand coming from all of a sudden? And how did you bridge that with supply? Because I'm familiar with our supply chain problem in this agri-tech sector. Sometimes... Again, our farmers either, again, correct me if I'm wrong. Let me just refresh my memory. Sometimes our farmers, for some reason, pick the same produce to plant. And all of a sudden, everybody's planting the same thing. And then they create a surplus. Sometimes, naman, what happens is that it's a supply chain problem where, you know, they were able to create produce, the middleman, basically buys it super cheap. They're not able to generate any type of sustainable income at all. And then it really just screws them over. And then whatever those middlemen in between sells it to whatever the retail process would be, right? Or is that a mix? Is that accurate? Or am I just making stuff up here? Or where is this demand coming from and how were you able to bridge that gap?
Okay. So I'll try to simplify a value chain for fresh produce. So farmers, what they do is majority of them sell at the trading post, around 70% to 80% sell at trading post, and the rest sell through consolidators, such as Kita.
Okay.
So consolidators is from farmers direct to buyers, to clients, such as Horeca, hotels, restaurants, supermarkets, wet markets, etc., consumer. Now, when the farmer sells, before they can sell at the trading post or through consolidators such as Kita, they need financing. A lot of farmers don't have the money to buy the agri-inputs, fertilizers, pesticides. And normally how it works for financiers is they get a profit share. So they finance the farmers and then they profit share 60-40, 70-30 in favor of the financier.
What?
So it depends sometimes.
50-50. That's yes. Predatory. Okay.
Well, according to our financial friends, they do that because farmers are considered high risk. If there's a typhoon or there are pests and the harvest gets wiped out, it's a financier who loses all their money, not the farmer. You know, that's the way the financier, that's the logic behind
it. Okay, makes sense. All right, I'll take that back. All right. So you're technically investing in the farmer as a service to be able to harvest that crop.
Yeah, then you share the profits.
Got it.
Okay. Okay. So the farmer, his investment is his labor and his land. For the financier, it's his money.
Makes sense.
Now, we are fairly successful as consolidator, sourcing from farmers, trading posts, and going direct to buyers. As we try to be as hyper-efficient and savings, you know, learnings from digital, you know, my experience in digital
right.
With the Gokongwei family, like the whole culture there. So how it works is there's bidding from hotels and restaurants, sometimes weekly, sometimes monthly. So it's lowest prices.
Got it.
And whoever provides the lowest price, then you win the bid and then you supply them for 1 month. You know, you're locked in for 1 month. Your price is locked in for 1 month. But since it's lowest prices, guess what? Who gets squeezed in that whole value chain? The farmer. So our advocacy in Kita is to help farmers. So even in our IDs, to remind all our employees, it's helping farmers. So you have it here.
I love it. Nice. Yeah, it's there. Helping I see farmers. It. Okay, there you go.
in our calling cards, even in our trucks, in all our marketing materials, we have Bible verses and helping farmers. So it reminds us what our vision and advocacy is. So we are not helping farmers by bidding the lowest price in our current business model. So we told ourselves, how do we truly help farmers? Mm-hmm. Okay. Farmers have three problems. Number one is expensive agri inputs.
Okay.
Because they buy at small retail prices because they're not able to buy at scale.
Okay.
Number two is expensive financing because they're high risk. They don't have a credit score. And number three is lack of crop insurance. Most farmers don't avail of crop insurance. It's just too tedious. And insurance is based on data. So we told ourselves, how do we solve all three at scale? And we said, since majority of farmers sell at the trading posts, it's by digitizing the trading posts.
Mm.
By digitizing trading posts, you're able to capture all their transactions. You're able to consolidate all the agri-inputs requirements of the farmers at trading posts, go direct to the manufacturer, buy the wholesale, and pass on the savings to the farmer so that their production cost goes down.
Amazing.
As their production cost goes down, then their income goes up, and you're also able to offer lower prices to your hotel, restaurants, supermarkets. Number two, by digitizing trading posts, you're able to capture all the transactional data. Transactional data, you're able to check whether farmer's profitable or how much sales he made for the day. As you share that with banks, with fintech institutions, they can now build a credit score. Once a farmer has a credit score, then you can lower financing costs for farmers.
Yeah, because now they're not that high risk anymore. Already.
Score. And tied into the score is crop insurance, because you need to save the farmer from, protect them from weather.
Of course.
Now, insurance is based on data, the way you calculate your insurance premium. So since you're able to gather big data by digitizing trade posts, you can now share that with insurance companies, with crop insurance providers, who can now provide simpler, faster, and better coverage. You'll make it easier for the farmer to avail of crop insurance and higher coverage as well. So those are the three things. And the key is to digitize the trading post. Nobody in Southeast Asia and India have been able to successfully digitize a trading post. So once we do that, you'll be the first to do that in this region.
That's amazing. And that's also the hardest thing to do, right? Because at the end of the day, it all starts and ends with the farmer. Right. And if that is the origin of the problem, right, how are you able to then get all these farmers? Because it's not like they're just out in the open. Yes, they're in the trading posts and whatnot. But, you're literally going to have to go through every single farm to be able to get access to that, to their crops and whatever they're doing. How are you able to build that supply?
Well, remember, majority of farmers sell at the trading posts. You don't need to go to their farms. Mm. They go to the trading posts. That's where you get to meet them. We try to go to each and every farmer, but that's not scalable again.
you're going to be spending a lot of time in central Luzon and then northern Luzon to do that.
Correct.
So when you go to these trading posts, what's the pitch like? Because at the end of the day, you're going to have to adapt your pitch, of course, and be someone trustworthy. Because of course, I'm pretty sure a lot of these farmers can be skeptical. Because a lot of people are, again, predatory, can take advantage of who they are and what they're doing, right? How do you get to win them over if it all ends and begins with the farmers?
Number one is, Mr. Farmer, would you want cheaper agri-inputs, significantly cheaper agri-inputs?
Mm.
Of course, yes. Number two, would you want to have much lower financing costs? Yeah, lower financing? Yes. Do you want to have crop insurance, easy to avail, crop insurance and higher coverage? Because right now, crop insurance, the government provides crop insurance, but it's only 20,000 pesos initially. So that's very small.
Yeah.
They say yes to all three. How do you get all three? And number four is, do you want to ensure that next time there's no oversupply and prices go down and then you lose money? You have to throw away your vegetables instead of paying it to, selling it. Yes, to all four. And the way to do this by digitizing the trading post. Because by digitizing the trading post, you can also put a floor price. So for example, what's happening in cabbages right now, since there's an oversupply of cabbages, since a lot of farmers planted cabbages and the demand is low, it's now as low as 2 pesos per kilo,
oh my
two to
God.
5 pesos per kilo. costs, which, you know, much lower than the production cost. But by digitizing trade posts and financing their ag inputs, supplying them with ag inputs, you are in a position to influence the farmers and tell them, okay, group farmer group A, you plant cabbages. Farmer group B, don't plant cabbages, plant carrots. Farmer group C, because you're the one financing, supplying their agri inputs. Whoever finances them, provides them agri inputs, can dictate to them what to plant. Or is in a position to suggest and strongly influence, you know, what to plant. So you don't have oversupply. Later on, we plan to be more precise with AI once you have big data in place.
Makes sense.
So it's... We believe our first will be the first in Southeast Asia, India. MasterCard is very interested to partner with us to do this in India later on, since the Indian government has been trying to digitize the trading post in India also for the longest time. So hopefully we can do that in India as well later on.
And I bet you guys will be able to do that, because again, the turnaround story is just absolutely remarkable. And you mentioned earlier again that you had 100K from the in the bank, whatever's left of the 2.5M that you got initially. But how were you able to do that fast turnaround? You know, undoing a lot of the initial mistakes from the reselli thing and now doing it in Kita. How were you able to accumulate so much acceleration? And what did you do right this time to be able to do that?
Well, since we're down to 3 employees, I got to build, I had opportunity to build, get the right people in place, starting off with a sales team.
Okay.
We didn't focus on tech this time around, since our learnings from One Network and reselli was one of the key things that hampered our growth was tech. We were waiting, like what you mentioned, you have to balance business development and tech.
Yep.
And we were too focused on tech for both One Network and reselli. So now we focused more on, we said, what we didn't have any tech was just a bonus. Let's just focus first on sales and business development, getting as many clients as we can.
Yeah.
Then, you know, if you have clients, then it's easier to source, you know. I mean, you just go to the farmer trading post and offer them a good price, and then they will supply you.
Nice.
And so I'm really hustled on that side and getting as many clients as possible.
And the clients came in the form of the hotels and the restaurant chains, the demand side, technically.
Yes, that's correct.
That's amazing.
So that's what we really hustled. We focused on sales.
Okay. Now, I'll ask a couple of things. From a personal standpoint, because what a lot of us founders don't have the luxury of is to lick our wounds and rest. Because every day is wartime, especially in this type of situation where you have less than 6 months runway. You don't have the luxury, like, wait, let me just ponder things over. You have to be a wartime CEO. As a founder, bro, what I want to understand is, like, coming from the point where you're already at that super crossroads where it's either you take a job or you take an investment, how were you able to also get your mojo back on? I went through this the whole year last year, and it's only till December I was kind of like, that was one of the most mentally tough things I've ever done. And I think I've unlocked a new level of resilience that I was pretty resilient back then. I've already come from a failure before as well. And now I'm on my fourth startup because I created a new startup with my wife. Just a cash flow. It's not really a tech startup, but it's a pressure washing business. Technically, it's a service because there's so much grime in the Philippines. Nobody's doing anything about it, right? And we called it Papa Pressure. But going through that in Podcast Network Asia, I'm still doing both things. Thank God I have my wife to do Papa Pressure. Again, unlocked so much grit and resilience in me, but there are really dark times where I just felt like I don't want to do this anymore. But every single time, I also cheat myself like, you kind of have no choice. This is a duty now. This is bigger than you. This is bigger than the hassle that you're feeling. How were you able to get your mojo back? Because sometimes your own psyche is going to be the whole fuel for your business. And if you can't fix it, the whole business will also crumble.
Well, of course, I had no choice because, you know, I had to support my family. And also, and I think this is key, is you have to believe in a higher power. It's just God, Jesus. You know, in my case, it's I believe in Jesus, I believe in God. And he's the ultimate. I mean, he's got your back. If he's got my back, he answered my prayer. He gave me the $2.5 million investment. So how can you lose? How can you fail if you do your part and you, the rest you leave up to God? How can you fail? There are so many instances. Like last year, 2 years ago, there were instances not wherein we didn't have enough money for payroll, even with the 2.5 investment. It was my birthday, August 10. And we just 150,000 pesos for payroll. It was just a few days away, August 14.
Yeah.
So I was praying like hell on my birthday. And I said, Lord, I just need 150,000. Please help me. And then somebody called me. I said, Mark, I heard you're looking for a loan. Yeah. How much you need? I said, 150,000. Okay, I can take it.
What? That's amazing.
So yeah. So we met at night and then he just gave me 150,000 bucks. Another instance, I was in Baguio. So this was the next angel investment. So I was in Baguio. I went to Kibungan meeting with the farmers, which is 4 hours from Baguio. I didn't have a driver. I was driving myself. So I was so tired. I arrived back in Baguio from Kibungan in Mangkayan at 8 p.m. And then a friend of mine, the one who arranged a meeting with the farmers, said, Mark, you want to go to Rotary? Join Rotary Baguio?
Okay.
And inside, I was just, I mean, after I left Manila at 5 a.m., I've been driving the whole day in Benguet, all over Benguet.
Yeah.
I just back in the hotel at 8 p.m. All I want to do is just, sleep.
Right,
lie down and sleep. But this voice inside was saying, telling me, go. Mm. So I went to the Rotary thing. And then I met the Rotary president at the time. Just, hi, hello, 5 minutes. And I got to mention that, we're meeting the MasterCard senior vice president visiting our warehouse. Our small, 100 square meter warehouse next week. She goes, Mark, can I join? I'm interested, to learn more about your business. So I told myself, okay, sure. But I didn't take it, I didn't think she would go because she's based in Baguio. And then, so next week she arrived and she was listening while I was presenting to the MasterCard regional head, senior vice president, regional head, Mr. Cocky. And she says, Mark, is it okay if you talk? Can you pitch to me again? Can you present again? I have a few questions. So after I brought the Mr. Cocky out, I presented to her. Then she says, Mark, I'd like to invest.
What?
I'm interested in investing. How much for one board seat? I wasn't prepared for that.
Are you kidding me?
I wasn't prepared because, So who does that, right? After just one pitch.
One board seat. Amazing.
After one presentation. So top of my head, I said, I just invented the number, 10 million.
Mm-hmm.
Then she goes, can I get 2 board seats for 20 million? And I can give you the money right now.
What?
I mean, who does that?
Gosh. This dude, I have never met anyone in this podcast who is just that malakas. I love your story. And again, this is not chamba, ha? It's because you're able to sort of predict when you need it, and then you always have backup from up above. Just when you need it the most. I love it. Right?
Prayers. Yeah. That's why, that's what keeps me going.
Okay.
Although I'm saying I'm far from, in terms of faith, very, very far. But struggle, I think that's my biggest struggle. More than the business, it's really my faith.
Yeah.
Faith in Him. Faith
but
in
again, him. You've always been able to really prove, and that's why you're always rewarded. So just a few more before we let you go. A couple things. Right. So you went from getting all these angel investments. Obviously, you won't be able to unlock $3 million as an investment if you didn't generate traction. So how did those initial angel investment turned that into traction? And then how did you unlock that $3 million investment?
Well, we are very focused on sales and business development. We try to be as hyper-efficient as possible. So we're probably one of a few agri companies in the Philippines using SAP, SAP as our ERP.
Wow.
So that we have access to real-time data and try to be as efficient as possible. We, in terms of hiring, we focused on sales and operations, mostly sales. So we are fortunate to get very good salespeople, high progressive. We set a attractive commission scheme. So it's performance-based incentive commission scheme for our sales team.
Mm-hmm.
And we are fortunate to get big accounts as our clients. So with that initial traction, December last year, I started reaching out to VCs. So cold calls, cold messaging, cold texts, because you're running out of cash again. And yeah, we were fortunate that Gentry replied.
Shout out, Mark Sung.
Yeah. And yeah, they seem to believe in our strategy and our team. So they brought in, they introduced us to Altara Ventures, our co-lead investor.
Altara, okay.
And yeah. But of course, since it was a very difficult funding environment, last year and even this year, due diligence took longer than expected.
Absolutely.
So we're supposed to close around in just 3 months. It took 7 months before we closed. But
yes,
that's how it did. So I guess for other startup founders, be prepared.
And that's why you have to optimize your profit all the time. Because what if they finish the DD and you're already dead? What are we going to invest in? Right? So you really have to operate like a traditional business and optimize your profit. That's also what I learned last year. Right? You know what? Screw the funding environment. The best way to make money is through revenue and optimize your profit. And whether you have a best tech stack, I mean, you'll be able to fix it down the road anyway with enough runway. But the best way to really extend your runway is through profit. And if you can't really do anything about that, it's going to be very, very hard to do. So last few questions, Mark. So what's up next for you guys? This is very interesting. And you've seen hyper growth in such a quick turnaround time. What are you going to be building next for Kita?
Well, we see a lot of opportunity on the fintech side. Because as you build the credit score, nobody in the world has been able to build a farmer credit score by digitizing trading posts. So it's something unique and novel. Then that's huge because each trading post processes around 1 billion pesos worth of vegetables a month.
Wow.
And according to MasterCard, the largest untapped unbanked sector in the world is the agricultural sector. Just in the Philippines, most farmers don't have bank accounts. Yeah. So whoever can bank the farmers or bring them, provide them bank accounts, which we can by digitized trade posts, is a potential unicorn, a unicorn story in the making. Hopefully, with God's grace.
That is amazing. Thank you so much, Mark, for such an amazing and inspiring episode. Also, to start off one of our very first interviews within the year. But again, if people want to reach out to you or interested, maybe want to invest in whatnot, where do they go and how do they do that?
Well, they can visit our website and they can email us, or they can just message me on Facebook, Messenger, or WhatsApp.
There you go. Or on LinkedIn.
And before I end, our advocacy again help farmers. So if there's anybody out there who shares our advocacy helping us, we'd love to partner with you guys. We're doing all of this at the end of the day to help farmers. Like what I keep on telling my team, even if we're very successful financially, if you become very successful financially, if you don't help farmers, you're still a failure.
Dude, I love your story. I'm rooting for you. You guys are amazing. And hopefully on Founders Only, we'll have you back when you achieve unicorn status. But I know it's not going to be an easy path, but you've been through the worst. And I know everything is just gravy after that point. But before I let you go, follow us on whatever podcast app you're listening to, whether Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or any type of podcast app. And if we did say some jargon, it's going to be the show notes on hustleshare.com. And again, big shout out to our premium supporters, Angelo Lee, Gab Abbott, Gentry Fund, and a bunch of other more who continuously support Hustle Shares so we can immortalize a lot of amazing stories just like Mark's and Kita's right here. And if you want to join and support Hustle Share, you can also do that at premium.hustleshare.com. Again, Mark, thank you very much.
Thank you also for inviting me on your show, Ron.
All right. And I'll see you guys in the next episode. Peace.